Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
I'm Kim Grinnells of Dogman.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. We are high above Husky Stadium, where University of Washington defeated Arkansas State 52-3 in front of an announced crowd of 58,772.
I'd say it was at least 25,000 below that.
Yeah. Game time was...
And this was Band Day, by the way. What would it have been like without Band Day?
Well, I think they were counting the seagulls and the blades of turf down there. And
I guarantee you there were more seagulls here 15 minutes after the game was over than people.
Yeah. 64 degrees at kickoff, first half. Not real pleasant weather-wise. We had a pretty heavy, steady rain for the entire first half. Second half kind of spared us a little bit, but... story of the day was Washington's offense. They came through in a big way with 598 total yards of offense.
Well, I'll go with your price. If you think the opinion was it was all about the offense, they certainly executed. But we knew Arkansas State was a sieve defensively. I mean, they had given up 55 points last week to Memphis. Now, Memphis, obviously, very good offense. But the bottom line is if Washington could just figure out a way to execute and come up with a half-decent game plan – they had the bodies to be able to move the ball. And they finally were able to do it because they decided to open things up a little bit, start with the pass to kind of generate a little bit of offense. And then after the first three and out, which, of course, you could hear a little bit of the Boo Birds, that second series was when they were able to finally loosen up the defense. Dylan Morris found Jalen McMillan for a 39-yard pass down the field on the south side, and then after that they were able to go in and score. Obviously throwing the ball deep really, really helped. I think, Scott, in your story you had that pass as the play of the game that kind of opened things up. And from there on out they were kind of able to do what they wanted because they had some run-pass balance.
You guys were up here working, and I think that they fed you Jimmy Lake's post-game press conference.
Yes.
I listened a little bit.
I thought he took a couple of shots at John Donovan talking about opening the game up to open up those running lanes, and then not running such a conservative, predictable offense. So they definitely came out throwing the ball a lot more today than I anticipated.
Well, see, when I always, and it doesn't matter if we're not necessarily talking about Jimmy Lake when I'm talking about this. I'm talking about any coach that's coached at Washington, that's had offensive coordinators, that's tried to do things. I've always been told that, not only is it the players who practice the best that week are going to play, and that goes to Lake's talk about being an equal opportunity employer, but it's always been about trust. And do you trust the players out there to go out and make plays? And I frankly just don't know or haven't seen any evidence to suggest that John Donovan trusted Dylan Morris. And I think it took Jimmy Lake, now this is me in my putting my tinfoil hat on, thinking that Jimmy Lake had to force John Donovan's hand and say, look, we got to throw the ball out. We got to let him loose a little bit. We got to let him go down the field. And if it means we throw a pick or two, we've seen that already, but we've got to take some shots. And we're going up against a defense that's a sieve. So if we can't do that, then we've got some real issues.
Well, you talk about trust. They got somebody back that they obviously trust who was huge in the first half in Jalen McMillan. Scott, how big of a difference did he make?
Oh,
but what was the running joke in the press box?
Yeah.
He like quintupled his career production
in
the first quarter.
Yeah, it was impressive the way he caught the ball, because I'll tell you what, that's not the Jalen McMillan we saw in spring ball and in fall camp.
Or even last year.
He was having struggles hanging onto the ball. He finishes with 10 receptions, 175 yards, and a touchdown. Didn't have a drop that I remember.
But what did he have? 8 for 150 in the first half?
8 for 152, yeah.
He was the first Pac-12 player to have a first half.
Wide receiver, yep.
Yep, first wide receiver to have a first half of over 150 yards since John Ross did it against California
in 2016. That's all Pac-12 receivers.
Correct. That's every Pac-12 receiver.
But Scott, having him out there, is that something that added another dimension to the offense? Or was it just something that they were playing better?
I think it's obvious that it did. I mean, look, he could have done that all day. That defensive back that was on him was scared. He could have done a 10-yard just turn and catch the ball all day long, because that guy was backing off all day long after he got passed up on that 39-yard touchdown. Or I'm sorry, 39-yard reception, and then he gets beat for a 33-yard touchdown a little bit later. But
that was a great,
play. Beautiful throw by Morris, and great catch by him. But you know, him and Terrell Bynum, and then you throw in Taj Davis. He had another big day. Those guys having big days like they did are big reasons why the offense was able to move the ball all over the place.
Taj Davis, 5 receptions for 94 yards. And, you know, the guy on the sideline that I kept looking at, you know, which everybody thought was going to have a big year, and that was Romu Dunze, you know. And if they can get Romu Dunze back, they've got Taj Davis going a little bit. They've obviously got Jalen McMillan going.
Terrell Bynum.
How big is that going to be if they get Romu Dunze back?
Absolutely. That's 4 receivers that they can trust.
Yeah.
So,
and Cade Otton, I thought he struggled today catching the ball.
Well, he had 2 receptions for 23 yards and the one touchdown, the very first touchdown of the day. I don't know if he struggled catching the ball.
To me, if you are Arkansas State's defensive coordinator, who are you trying to take out of the game in the pass situation?
Heading into the game, it was Cade Otton.
So when you try to take Cade Otton out of the game, you're basically saying, we haven't seen enough of Terrell Bynum, even though he had a great game at Michigan. We still haven't seen enough of him. We don't have hardly any film of Jalen McMillan. We have a little bit of film on Taj Davis, but none of those guys have impressed us to the point where you guys feel like they could just take the top off anytime they wanted to. Well, as it turned out, they could. We knew they could. They just hadn't done it yet. And then that's where you see a performance like you did from McMillan. Basically, what we saw from McMillan today is the same type of effort that we saw from Taj Davis in that last scrimmage that was open to the public. It was just a breakout performance. No one had any design or any thought of it going to happen. And then all of a sudden, it took a couple big catches for him to go, wait a second, is this guy going to have a big day or not? Because he literally, every big catch that he was thrown or every big toss that he was thrown in 2020, he was dropping. And the one in the end zone, I can remember a couple of them where he just dropped them.
Fourth down, they just don't even bother to cover Cade Otton.
Well, it wasn't that. They got sucked in.
They got sucked in because they play action
because they had been running the ball really well. And Morris showed great patience. He didn't rush the throw, and because he was pressured on that throw, and still gets it off. And Otton just is wide open, but you could see it. The defense all sucked in. Otton just looped right behind him, and that was it.
Again, Cade Otton with 2 receptions for 23 yards, and we failed to mention Terrell Bynum had 4 receptions for 64 yards.
And 61. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was 61.
Okay. Well,
I wrote it several times.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I wrote it several times.
All right, 61. I wrote it once. And a touchdown.
Okay, and a touchdown. Yep.
And a touchdown. So
it's 3 yards, Scott. But why are you making a
mistake? I think the story of the offense also has a lot to do with the running game. You know, Richard Newton, 10 carries for 52 yards. Kamari Pleasant came in, 8 carries, 48 yards. I'd like to see his stats for yards after contact.
Because
he was a bowling ball out there. Sean McGrew does exist. 6 carries for 31 yards. And
2 scores.
Cam Davis, 7 for 27 and a big fumble.
The touchdown by McGrew, the very first one that he had, the 13-yarder, where he made the linebacker look absolutely silly.
Oh, yeah.
That cut that he made, look, he just looks silly.
Yeah, the first carry, you know, he gets hit in the backfield. Yeah.
But those are the things that these coaches know he's capable of doing. Mm-hmm. Are we simply here to surmise that he wasn't doing it in practice? Well, we had Jimmy Lake post game talking about how he had such a great week of practice. They needed to get him in on special teams, that they had to get him a different jersey because they were getting him on the same special teams as Alex Cook. And you can't have two fives out there. So is it just literally a matter of Sean McGrew turning it on and all of a sudden the coaches are like, well, you've earned the right to come out and play? Because the bottom line is they used all four of their running backs that we expected them to see, all season long, and they finally decided to use them today. Why didn't they use them 2 weeks ago?
Well, how much of a difference?
Especially when you had Terrell Bynum out, when you had Jalen McMillan out, Rome Odunze out, and then Jalen Polk goes out after his first catch of his career.
Let's be honest, all the running backs looked better. And why did they look better? The offensive line played night and day better than we've seen him in the first two games.
No disagreement. No disagreement at all. And that's a huge part of any execution on the offense comes down at the line of scrimmage. And it starts there. And obviously they did a really, really good job of not only getting some lanes for the running backs, but really protecting Dylan Morris. And Morris was able to execute, and he was able to get out of plays and was able to move the ball down the field, which was a huge part of today.
Because I'm still a big believer in the first two games. You know, I don't think Sean McGrew is any better at running into brick walls than the other two guys. And that's what was happening against Michigan and against Montana. There was just no room to run.
Yeah, that's some of it. I don't think Washington was... I think the second half versus Michigan, when Washington was able to make some plays down the field, I think, and then if rumors are to be had that Jimmy Lake basically told John Donovan that, hey, you know, you need to open this up. If you don't, we're not going to win, and we're all going to be out of a job. Maybe that's why things opened up for Sean McGrew today, besides the fact that Arkansas State just isn't very good defensively.
Yeah.
But, you know... Could he have made a difference against Michigan? I don't know. It's hard to say.
But the thing is that he is a multi-talented guy. We're not talking about a running back going into brick walls. We're talking about a guy that can get outside, a guy you can use in the pass game, a guy you can use in the screen game. He's a very versatile kid who can make people miss.
But how much?
The other two guys were not making anybody miss.
How much of these running lanes had to do with Washington's offensive line playing better and them throwing the ball downfield and opening it up?
I think it was because they were able to throw the ball downfield a little bit that opened things up for the run game.
Yeah.
That everyone understood that if they were going to try to force it in. And look, this you talked about why Cade Otton was so open on his touchdown. It's because they got sucked in on the play action. Why did they get sucked in on the play action? Because everything that was on tape against Montana and Michigan was Montana and Michigan stuffing the line of scrimmage at the box and basically daring Washington to throw. So if you're Arkansas State, why would you veer away from a formula that worked really, really well for the first two teams?
I figured out the first two games. It was a setup
for
this Arkansas State game.
Dylan Morris, 23 of 39 for 367 yards, three touchdowns, but those two turnovers, those two interceptions are going to bite him in the butt and film him.
The one interception that he threw down the seam to Otten, I was on third and eight? And, I mean...
Was that tipped at the line of scrimmage?
No, that one...
The second one was tipped,
so... Maybe the first one they say, hey, there's a different read for you. But on the second one, his guy was open that he was throwing to. The guy just jumped up and got right in the lane and made a good play.
Right. Yeah, but I thought Dylan had a pretty good game, and then there were a couple of scramble plays where I thought he had some guys open downfield where he threw the ball away. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of Dylan's mentality. He's not going to... You know, he's trying not to make those mistakes, even though he had the two turnovers.
Well, when he sets up and he's going straight through the pocket downfield, I think he'll find people. It's when he starts to drift out to the right is when it's basically a lost cause. Because we saw that all the time with Keith Price. Once he started veering to the right, it was out into the bleachers.
We also saw him take off a couple of times. We haven't seen that much.
Yeah, that was nice, especially that one up the middle for that first down.
Yeah, and I still contend, guys, that he needs to do some more read option where he keeps it. He's got to be able to keep defenses honest that way too. And I know Cal, for instance, will see the tape of him and see some escapability and know that he can be a potential threat. But he's still not at the point where guys are going to spy on him and take up an entire extra defender to try to, like, defend him. And because right now, he is bound to give up that ball all the time. Or he's going to pull it back and he's just going to try to pass it really quickly. It's just going to be one of those things. So I really hope to see that he tucks it. Because he doesn't have to do it that much, guys. If he does it once or twice a game, that's all they need. And even if they don't necessarily get a ton of yards, maybe if they get 1 or 2 yards a pop, that's fine. Because the whole point is to keep the balance going. And even though Washington ran the ball a lot at the end to just kind of salt the clock away, 83 plays, they still had only – they had 44 passes to 39 runs. I don't know if fans are going to be kind of curious about that or not, because it sure felt like, right? It felt like they were just throwing the ball up and down the field all night long. But the bottom line is there was still a lot of balance that will help them when California tries to game plan against them.
Scott, you guys just – I mean, I can't tell. I'm down on the field. What did you see out of the offensive line today?
They were getting movement. I mean, they allowed one quarterback sack, and that was because Dylan held the ball too long.
And again, he wants to escape up. So kudos to Dylan. I don't think anyone's going to mind him getting sacked on that particular play because all the pressure was coming up.
But he really should have just gotten the ball out.
But it was late. Yeah, he had plenty of time.
Yeah, he had plenty of time. And then there were no quarterback hurries, at least not in the official stats. So I thought they did really well. I thought almost all of the runs were positive yardage. There were a few that were negative yardage where guys slanted in and whatever. But overall, I think I put them in my handouts to the standouts and just say, hey, as much maligned as they have been the first 2 weeks, and for good reason, they played really well. They were solid. Now, you can say that Arkansas State's defense isn't that good, and it really isn't. They have some talented guys up front.
Well, a lot of transfers
from Tennessee, from TCU, from Florida State. Yep. They've got guys coming in to play at this that were taken by high-end schools, Power 5 schools, to come in. And so they're playing here. So Washington's defense, our offensive line, was able to hold up and hold those guys out. And I think that was huge for this offense. And I think it gives – look, this offense lacked a lot of confidence. I think the Montana game, I think they expected to come in and just roll. They didn't. Confidence plummets. Yep. Go into Michigan, confidence plummets even more. This, they needed this game in order to get their confidence back. And I think the offense is going to come out. They might not light up Cal. They might even lose to Cal. But I don't think we're going to see the same poor offense that we saw in the first 2 weeks moving forward, because I think this offense has a little more confidence going in.
We had the debut of Sam Heward tonight.
Yep,
he had
2 for 5.
He was 2 for 5 for 31 yards. He had a couple of incompletes that were called pass interference calls. So, how big is that to get Sam out there a little bit? Because I can only imagine what Damon and his mom were thinking. Both went to UW.
Yeah,
what do you think they were thinking when they saw Sam out there?
It looked like Brock because of the way he drops back and he's wearing his number. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's just it, I mean, how cool is that to be a parent and see your kid out there playing for your alma mater and everything like that? He's not going to start this year, barring injuries. He's not going to start this year. But I think the fans got to get the chance to see what we saw of him throwing the ball around. He threw to his buddy several times, Jabez Tine.
Yeah.
Would have had a nice long completion if not for that pass interference.
Yeah.
So,
but he had a really nice throw to Giles Jackson.
Yeah, that was pretty.
Very pretty.
You know, and yeah. I said it to you guys, and I'll say it again. And I've heard it from several people, like Johnny DeRocher and several other people who coach quarterbacks. When a left-hander drops back and throws the ball, there's nothing prettier.
Well, he doesn't throw ducks. I mean, everything he throws is just, I mean, he spins it. Yeah. I mean, it's a tight, tight spiral.
Yeah, but it's got touch. It's weird because he guns it, but it still has touch.
And more than anything, guys, seriously, more than anything, his drive got points.
Yep, got 3 points.
Got 3 points out of it. So not only did he get a little taste of success, but he also got some points for the team.
And it was, they got it at the 12-yard line. It went 72 yards.
They're feeling good about it. Yeah. You know, he moved the ball. Ran the ball a little bit, threw the ball a little bit, didn't finish it the way they would want, but man, to get points off your very, very first drive in your UW career, that's a great deal. A
little bit of adversity as well. Second snap, MJ Ollie decides to go on one instead of two, you know. So
yeah, it puts him behind the sticks a little bit.
Yeah, so he has a little bit of adversity there. And just a couple stats from the game, too, on the offensive side of the ball. First downs, Washington had 30 first downs, and Arkansas State only had 15 rushing yards. Washington was 39 rushes for 200 net yards. That's a 5.1 average, which you'll take any day. Arkansas State was 23 rushes for 48 yards, so they only averaged 2.1 yards per carry. Total offense, Washington, 598 total yards on offense, and Arkansas State with 268, and a lot of that was in garbage time as well.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of that was in garbage time. Third down, Washington, impressive, 8 of 14, so I like that a lot. Arkansas State was 5 of 18. And
that was one of my keys. That was my key stat of the game, because Washington was able to get off the field on third down. That was huge.
And they got 15. Washington had 15 offensive drives.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time they had 15 offensive drives in a game.
Yeah. I don't know if you've tracked this at the beginning of the season, but this might be a season high. They had 61 players participate today.
Oh, for sure. I guarantee you it was.
61.
I guarantee you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's still not a ton. Yeah. I mean, that's a fair amount, but that's not a ton.
Yeah. So, story of the game, I still think, was the defense, and we're going to cover the defense.
I thought you just said it was the offense.
No. Well, they scored some points finally.
This is true.
Yeah.
I think that's just, but I thought the defense won the day. So
I agree.
We'll go down that and more when we return. It's the guys from Dogman.com on Dogman Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're back. It's the guys from Dogman.com. I'm Kim Grinnells with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. We are looking at to the right side. We're looking at Lake Washington, and
it looks like late October.
It's raining pretty hard out there. It's raining pretty hard out there for those of you who aren't here. But Washington soundly defeats Arkansas State 52-3. Again, attendance. Announced attendance. I think this isn't really attendance. I think it's tickets distributed.
Absolutely.
58,772. And it was band day, so there was a lot of band members and Seagulls and vendors and everything.
Well, what did they say? There was like, 1,200? Band members on the field for that include the Husky band too,
something like that. Yeah. But I think the player of the day, you know, from what I saw, you guys, like I said, you guys always have a different angle. But the guy just not only making plays, but the energy and the intangibles he brought. Bookie Radley Hiles was all over
and
the place.
One
today.
Part I did remember hearing, we had mentioned earlier that you asked if we had heard, and I was writing while Jimmy was talking. Mm-hmm. But the one part I did hear was him talking about Brennan Radley Hiles, and he said he played solid in the Montana
kept
game.
Improving.
And he played really well, but he said this is by far the best game that he's played. He was all over the place, 9 tackles, a sack, 2 tackles for loss, a pass breakup, a fumble recovery. I mean, he filled up the stat sheet. And,
for sure.
And he was my defensive player of the game. There are some other guys who I thought played really, really well, and we'll get to those here in a second, but you know, you can't really put a price tag, whatever you want to call it, on what he was able to do. He influenced every part of the game, passing game, running game, all that stuff. He influenced it.
We haven't had a chance to talk to Bookie. Now, I don't know if they, this is first chance.
Oh, today.
Did they pipe his interview in?
I couldn't tell. I thought we just heard Dylan Morris.
Dylan is the only one I remember.
Because I'm telling you right now, if you get a chance, listen to the audio of Bookie. Sometimes words can only take something so far. Just to hear him talk, the tone he talked, the way he talked, he's impressive. Mm-hmm. He's really impressive. And, you know, you may think that Eddie Lulifoscio, you know, is the straw that stirs a drink. It's Bookie.
Well, now.
You weren't talking about Ulofosio stirring anything today because he didn't even start.
And he barely played that I
he
remember.
He didn't play a ton. No. What he did is he played in some of those unique hybrid up front
where they were
using them as actual like outside linebackers and rush ends.
But I just thought that Bookie just set the tone for the day. He was all over the place. He was getting guys up. And I love him rushing the quarterback.
Like I said, I feel like ever since the first two games have happened, we've had to bring people back into some of the things that were happening in spring and fall to remind them, because they were able to see the same things too. And everything that we had heard about Bookie Riley Hiles coming in from Oklahoma to Washington was that how much of a perfect fit he was going to be for the style of nickel-based defense that they run. He was going to be the next Miles Bryant. He was going to be the next Elijah Molden. And stuffing the stat sheet like he did tonight, that's no different than what those guys would do. And that's exactly what you expect that nickel back to be able to do. And so I'm not saying that he didn't do that the first couple games, but he really influenced tonight's game in a way that was obviously very different than Montana or Michigan.
Rushing off the edge, I was getting visions of Buda Baker. Yeah, I was getting Buda flashbacks the way he was getting after the quarterback.
Well, and a special mention to Jacoby Covington, who certainly certainly did his part later in the game when they had the number twos up there. And I didn't know if he was going to get either a personal foul for almost like headhunting, or if he was going to get a foul for excessive celebration or something. But either way, it was a phenomenal play, and it goes to show, kind of the myriad things that these defensive backs are capable of doing when they're on their game.
I was expecting the referee to call, throw a flag on that, and then the announcement of, personal foul number 12 attempting to behead the quarterback.
Yeah. Well, no, they ended up with the personal foul later in that, or I don't know if it was that same series or the next series with Daniel Hey Mooley, with the fault with the pressure on the quarterback. But yeah, I mean, what was interesting, Kim, to me is that, if you really looked at Arkansas State those first two games when they played Central Arkansas and Memphis, they had the two-headed quarterback system where they didn't want to play two quarterbacks. But as it turned out, when the first guy just wasn't cutting it, the second guy came in and was unbelievably effective. And whether it was Hatcher or whether it was Blackman, it didn't really matter, because the other guy would always come in. Like, for instance, Blackman came in the second half against Memphis and threw for 306 yards and four touchdowns. That's why he started, I think, today. And
I'm honestly surprised he played as long as he did.
Exactly, because the thing is, Lane Hatcher didn't come into the game until it was 38-0 or 35-0. The game was so far out of reach that I couldn't tell if Butch Jones was like, was that a give up move, or was that just for him to get some reps to kind of stay
in
the
thing? Keep him in the thing.
Yeah,
it was just how miserable the game was at the beginning of the first half. It rained hard, and it rained steadily hard the entire first half. There was a point early in the third quarter where it just looked like Arkansas State did not want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just you could get that vibe, and I certainly got that vibe down on the field.
And that's an advantage that Washington has to be able to use all the time, not just against Arkansas State.
Seasons are always interesting because at some point players always break out and they appear, and a couple years ago we had the breakout. Nobody knew who Eddie Ulofosio was, and he had that breakout game with two fumble recoveries on special teams. But I think we had another one of those breakout players today in Carson Bruner. He had
he had eight tackles,
was all over the place, and he made a couple of big hits too.
Yeah, he did. He was like a heat-seeking missile. When the ball would go, he went full speed. He didn't break down. He just blew guys up. And I was very impressed with what he did.
See, well, here's what I want you to do, because Carson's dad, Mark, and his mom were on the sidelines for the Michigan game. I know that they were here today, and Mark's now scout for the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course. I want you to text Mark and see if you can get a scouting report on Carson for today.
No,
see if he'll give you
Mark
one.
Mark will never give me one. He will never do that. He's like, that's my son. I'm not doing that.
Can you give me the scouting report you gave to the Steelers on your son today?
Yeah.
No, but he was all over the place.
In all seriousness, it was very ZTF-like, and I'm not saying, because obviously they play different positions, But it was just one of those where he really just impressed with his athleticism and his speed going sideline to sideline. I mean, one of those first plays, he's literally flying to the Washington sideline, and he's just going. I mean, he is going hell-bent for leather. I mean, it was like, okay, 42's out there now, and it's like we didn't get enough chance to see that during spring and fall. Because obviously this is just his second year.
He made the move back from outside.
Correct. And he was in the middle of a move. And so, you know, the most of the times that we would see him, it would be with, like, Ben Hines. Or it would be, like, with Fuavai. You know, some of the other walk-on guys in the middle linebacker spot.
Drew Fowler,
exactly. So we didn't get the chance to really see him when he was properly going, like, full tilt. Well, we saw it today, and it was impressive. And not just that, he is a guy that he just looked like he was put. He's not the biggest guy in the world out there in the middle. What is he? Probably 220 now? 225?
225, probably. Yeah.
But he is a guy that is literally, you could just tell, he's putting his body on the line every play.
And he
has an instinct for the ball like Ulofosio, very much
when,
so.
When I watch Jackson Sermon, he has improved a lot, but I still think he's still not 100% trusting what he's seeing, and I think he's maybe a step or slower than he needs to be really super effective. But with Carson Bruner, there is no hesitation. He literally
in that way he's got some Ben Burkert.
I was just gonna say that.
The inside linebackers were pretty much a pinata for a lot of the fan base last year, and you know, when you're talking to the coaches and you ask them where their most depth was, and they talked about inside linebacker. And we got a really good dose of that today with, you know, not only Carson Bruner, but MJ Tafisi out there. You know, Hamuli, you know, played a lot. So, you know,
Hamuli started.
Tell us what was going on with the linebackers and the starters and just the substitutions.
It's a question that we're probably going to have to ask Jimmy Lake.
And to be honest with you, Lake did note. Oh. He didn't obviously say in specifics because he's never going to tell you. But he said that there were some guys that were dealing with a little bit of some nicks.
Oh, okay.
So that tells me that Thule might have been nicked up a little bit. Also tells me Ulofosio may have been nicked up a little bit too. Because I just don't see Ulofosio getting taken out of that game. Mm-hmm. I don't see him taken out of that game unless there's something physically going on with him.
Do you see any drop off without having him in there?
Not against this team.
Not this team.
Let's see what
it looks like against Cal before we get too excited.
Well, this was the number one passing team in the country.
Yes, but
but who have they played? Central Arkansas and Memphis.
Still the number one passing team in the country.
There's no doubt about that.
I don't think you can argue that. I
was just really impressed with Carson Bruner, and I absolutely. And I thought MJ Tafisi made some plays out there too.
MJ Tafisi should have had an interception.
But Kim, if you want to talk about what Washington was able to do against their passing offense, to me that was a win for Bob Gregory. That was a win for Rip Rowan. That was a win for Akaika Molloy. Those guys in their front, they schemed the hell out of that game. We saw some fronts like, you know, and again, this is why Jimmy Lake loves going up against these spread-style offenses so much, is because they can dial up such exotic looks up front. We had the one where there was no defensive lineman on the field. Ulofosio was being used as an outside linebacker and twisted up inside and could have gotten James Blackman if he hadn't gotten rid of the ball so quickly. But they literally had. They had Ulofosio, Savelle Smalls, Ryan Bowman. And who else? Was it – I think there was another end. Trice, maybe? I think it was Braylon Trice, was on there.
There was Savelle Smalls a few times.
Yeah. So they really used some exotic looks, to confuse Arkansas State and make it really tough for them to kind of know where the things were coming from. And then, of course, when you're only running like those three or four guys to try to think, you got cover eight behind you. So, yes, I know Washington fans were really – upset about throwing the safety that far deep against Michigan and Montana, but against a team like this, it makes total sense.
Okay. One thing that I did not mention, I'm going to have to go and add to my story, is because I mentioned Alex Cook and the kind of day he had a blocked punt.
He sure did.
When was the last time we saw a blocked punt from this team?
It's been a while. A couple years ago, yeah. I think, at least.
And it was, what was really funny was the TV broadcast showed Keith Bonifa And the players are all shaking him and roughing him up, saying, that was your call. He made that call. And you could see it coming. I mean, they had five guys converge on that. And Arkansas State almost got a first down out of
No, when it comes to the defense, Cook and Bruner, I think, were the object guys in terms of if you wanted to see guys literally making a difference just based on their hustle and being at the right place at the right time and making a difference that way. Those two guys, I thought, played the best games.
Just one, you know, one minor disappointment, I think, from the game, and one little bit of cause of concern. I still didn't see the pass rush that we were hoping to see. You know, a lot of that because they were in the dime package and just running different schemes, but we just didn't see that.
It was a contained scheme.
It was a contained scheme, but it also, they got pressure. They just didn't get to him.
Yeah.
They got some pressure, though. There were a couple times they got him off his spot. How close was Ryan Bowman? At least two or three times where he hit the quarterback as he's throwing the ball, and it ended up being an incomplete pass.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not going to say it was a world beater or anything like that. It was like Zion is in there and no hasn't missed a beat. But I think it's better than it shows on the stat sheet. Because if you watch the game, when people would rewatch this game, and I know people will, because they want to see what happened when they, you know, whatever, they're going to see a better pass rush than I think. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
I missed Chris Berman moment, because I would have loved to have seen Chris Berman with the highlights on Brayson Trice rumbling, bumbling down the sideline.
He was gassed.
Fa'atua Tele absolutely destroyed the quarterback.
Yeah.
And it just, did it just look like the Arkansas State players just stood there and looked at it?
Well, I think they were confused as to what exactly happened. I was a little confused myself. But bottom line is, Tua Tele forced that sack. He forced the fumble, and then Trice just picked it up and did what you're supposed to do if you're coached well, which is take the ball into the end zone and then let the referee sort it out.
Yes. Kind of like a runaway beer truck.
Yeah, but the bottom line is he was at the right place. And the thing was, it was such a weird play that Tua Tele made that fumble and made that play happen literally like what, 2-3 yards from the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about that's a defensive tackle. That's hustle. That's pursuit. Those are all the things that you want your defense to be known for.
And they haven't had they've been waiting for this big turnover for this, you know.
And Bookie was the one that got the first one. And then we know that, you know, from this week that Kyler Gordon and Trent McDuffie were they have this online thing or this competition between themselves as to who was going to get the first pick. And it was Julius Irvin who gets it. So I wonder if he had placed a marker down for himself to win something in that bet.
A little bit of a concern. Trent McDuffie on a punt return tweaked his ankle. He went into the training room with the trainers, and he came back out. He was still limping. He had his ankle taped up quite a bit. I'm guessing he'll be okay. And also,
at this point in the game, there was no reason to play him.
If it wasn't in a boot, if it wasn't in anything like that, then it's probably not a big deal, but we'll have to wait and see.
And Kyler Gordon also looked like he tweaked his ankle a little bit too.
Yeah.
So,
but he played the rest of the game, and well, till the starters were pulled, and then Jalen McMillan looked like something happened to his ankle toward the end of the first half.
Yeah, the first half.
But he went running in, and so I'm like, it can't be that bad if he's running in, and then he runs back out. And he ends up making a couple more catches in the second half.
Yeah, just overall, nice, impressive performance. But, you know, this is what probably would have been expected, you know. But the way the team's been played the first two games, it's just kind of a relief, you know, Husky fan base. I think this turned the temperature down a little bit from where it's been because it's been pretty hostile and pretty heated this past week.
Yeah.
So this takes the temperature down a little bit. So
yeah, from 99 to 88, 90.
For those that wanted to see something and found some room and reason to be positive, yes, this will turn the temperature down a little bit. Obviously, it'll still be wait and see until Cal. But for those that aren't sold on Donovan, for those that aren't sold on Lake, they're going to say this game didn't mean anything. I don't care. We don't care if there's people saying it right now. Yeah, we don't care if they put 680 yards on Memphis. What difference does it make? Memphis sucks. You know, Arkansas State sucks. Sun Belt teams suck. You know, they're going to justify anything to not feel good about what's going on with the program right now, because they've already made their minds up, Kim. They, 3 games into the season, they've already made their minds up.
Finish line at home. Take us home, Scott.
I all-around win for the Huskies. I thought they played unbelievably defensively, considering what this team was heading into the game. Arkansas State putting up over 500 yards and 45 points a game. Washington holds them to 3 points and less than 300 yards. Awesome, awesome performance by the defense. Offense did what they were supposed to do. I think this is what we should have seen, at least at the very least, against Montana. We didn't see it, so I guess it's a pleasant surprise. Let's see if they can continue it. Great momentum into conference play, but they got to get it done in conference play. It can't just be, you know, you beat Arkansas State 52-3, and then you come out and you lay an egg against Cal and you lay an egg against Oregon State. They have to keep improving. And I think Jimmy Lake's got that on the mind, but we'll have to see next week. Proof will be in the pudding.
Wrap it up, Chris Fetters.
Yeah, well, Kim, I know you're always one of those forward momentum people. You're never going to go look back and stuff. But I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of Washington fans. They're going to watch this tape and go, where was this 2 weeks ago? Yeah. What the hell happened against Montana? Because the thing is, even if they played like they played against Michigan, and that was not a good game by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not going to say it was. But I think a lot of Washington fans could sit here and go, look, if we blew out Montana, if we blew out Arkansas State, and then we lost the way we did to Michigan, it might be the same old, but at least we didn't fully embarrass ourselves like we did
against Montana.
And so everyone's going to look at this game and go, this isn't the same Washington team in any phase of play that we saw 2 weeks ago. So what in the hell happened? Those questions are going to dog Jimmy Lake and his coaching staff for weeks now, unless they can pile on performance after performance after performance to show that that an actual pattern is emerging, where they clearly put all those games in the rear view and are well ahead. So if I'm a Washington fan, I'm sitting here going, I look at this game and go, well, on the one hand, where was this 2 weeks ago? But on the other hand, this is going to show those guys that if you put in the week of practice you're supposed to put in, and if the coaches do what they're supposed to do in terms of scheming correctly in all 3 phases, you can come out and you can really put together a complete performance. It's not difficult to do if you're prepared. And so hopefully the players and coaches take that on board. They enjoy the success. They feel good about it because everyone, Jimmy Lake's sitting here with smiles on everyone's faces. Everyone feels good. They got their swagger back. They got their confidence back. But how much of this is going to translate to next weekend? Because that's the bottom line. Bottom line is, can they carry this over to Cal? And that's what everyone's going to want to know.
It's still going to take a while to get those 2 losses in the rearview mirror. It just hasn't been long enough. But I think it's really important for Washington to win those next 2 games going into the bye week and going into the bye week 3-2. These are 3 pretty important games, and to keep everything going and to keep that momentum going and get into that bye week at 3-2, because I think a loss in the next 2 games is, no matter what, is going to turn that heat right back up. So home game at Cal and then back down to Oregon State, and it sure feels like fall out here, guys. The weather wasn't really cold, but boy, it was kind of dark and wet and everything else that I'm just waiting. The leaves off the trees, next to the lake haven't fallen off, but I don't think
they're still green.
Yeah, I don't think that's far off with the weather we've got going. So, Cal next week. So, we're looking forward to that. And
should be a big recruiting weekend, too.
6:30 kickoff for the Cal game. So,
and we'll find out on Sunday or Monday, right, about Oregon State?
Yeah. We should.
Stick with us. We got a lot of football left in this season. So for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grenolds along with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund, and intern Jack. We didn't invite because he hadn't finished his work yet, so he's out there working hard. So we'll see you next week. Go Dogs.
Docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out. And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount+.